We will call a State Government Finance meeting to order for March 1st, 2012. We all have a quorum. Members, you have before you the minutes of our meeting from February 29th. Would someone move those minutes?
So moved.
Who made it?
Ernie.
Ernie did.
Representative Leidiger moves the minutes. Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. The minutes are approved. Members, we're going to take House File 2003 up first and then move to the Department of Administration after that. Welcome to the committee, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2003 is a continuation of last week's discussion. We do have a delete-all amendment that we put together that incorporated all the amendments that we passed last during the last committee. And I do have one oral amendment to that delete-all, and that is on line 2.7, and this is based on discussions during the last committee. I would like to strike within the meeting of Article 11, Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitution. There is some concern that that might be a hook for this to be a vehicle bill for other purposes, and that is not the intent, so I'm willing to strike that language.
Okay, members, I will move the 2003 UE1 amendment, which is essentially the work we did last time. I will move that, and all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Then I will move, as per the author's request, an oral amendment to delete on line 2.7 words within the meaning of Article 11, Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitution. Representative Woodard, any comment, further comment about that?
Mr. Chair, this was just a result of the discussion in our committee last week that this was something that caused some concern for members of the committee, and so our intent was to just clarify for the courts what we were doing here, but I'm willing to strike that, and from the spirit of compromise, it's gone.
Mr. Shepard, you have that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd suggest also delete the commas on either side of that group of language that you read.
I'm sorry I left out the commas. All right. You've heard the oral amendment. All in favor of the oral amendment signify saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. So we now have the bill in the form of the author's request. And Representative Woodard, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Other than without going through the entire bill again, I think we had a very good, robust discussion last week on this bill. There was some conversation about this being a Racino vehicle bill, and I have circled back with members and have spent some time with the stakeholders on this as well. This is important as a standalone bill, and so I will make some official statements here that, again, it is not our intention that this to be a vehicle bill for Racino. It is a standalone bill. And if on the House floor there is a Racino amendment proposed, I would oppose that amendment. And if that amendment were to attach itself to this bill on the House floor, I would ask that this be re-referred to House Ways and Means. If it was not referred to House Ways and Means, I would continue the bill and we would deal with it in another manner. But that is not the intent of this bill for Racino, and it is the intent that we allow Canterbury Park, Running Aces, our Minnesota Lottery, and the Gaming Control Board to remain operating under a shutdown.
Questions from the committee? Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Woodward, you do understand that once the bill is on the House floor, it is in the possession of the House, and that there have been historic times where someone wanted to withdraw a bill and they were not allowed to, and it was continued over that. So if there's any majority rule, if there's any majority rule that wants to put any amendment on, you will have no ability to withdraw the bill as long as that majority continues to wish to have the bill passed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, my understanding of that, Representative Kahn, is that typically the author is allowed that leeway, and that it's also that the Speaker has the ability to do that, and the Speaker would be willing to continue that bill as well. So I'm not sure what else I can do to leave anybody's fears that this is not a Racino vehicle bill, and that I will do everything in my power if that were to attach itself to this bill. And I think that, what I've just outlined would ensure that that doesn't happen.
Well, Representative, Mr. Chairman, I certainly believe everything you're saying. I just want you to understand that you need to point out where in the rules there's anything that doesn't allow the House to take possession of the bill and pass it. I admit the Speaker has a certain amount more power, and to overrule the Speaker also only takes a majority vote. I mean, you're just much more confident than I would ever be under the circumstances. So, well, and since usually people don't accuse me of underconfidence, I just wanted to check it out.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I think that's the benefit of your experience, and I do take that under advisement.
Yeah. Representative Kahn, I think you're also aware of the fact that we do not have a majority of the House that would support a Racino bill. That is, on the Republican caucus, there would not be the votes. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you just said what I wanted to make sure that the committee understood. I guess I kind of lead the charge for anti-Racino, and when Representative Woodard came to me about making modifications to the bill, my assurance to him is that even if it went down that path, that I felt more confident than I'd ever had that there wasn't the votes in the majority party to pass anything close to a Racino bill, attaching this to anything else. So I'm very comfortable that we've stripped it out, and I can assure the minority party, at least, that there are not the votes on the majority to make this a Racino bill on the floor.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Woodard. Appreciate the efforts that you've put into to make this alleviate some fears that some people have, and I appreciate Representative Kahn pointing out the more strict interpretation of the rules and what happens in the procedure. But I'm comfortable with this now, and I frankly believe that if somebody really wanted to use a bill as a vehicle for whatever purpose, they'd find a way to do it anyway. I may still put a cheeseburger bill on this.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
As long as they made out of horse meat, I guess it would work.
There's a germaneness right
there. We could fix our butchering laws in the state, too. Mr. Chairman, that wasn't what I was raising my hand to say. I think this bill is a good idea. The only problem I have with it is that it doesn't go far enough. And I've spoken to the chairman about this and the staff, and I think there are... I put in a bill with a very low number. In fact, I had it in last year, last session. Also, for a continuing resolution to let the state keep going continually through a shutdown. This is not new. I know the one I wrote was modeled after, or rather Mr. Shepard wrote, was modeled after the similar law in the state of Wisconsin. And I think, I don't want to inject sexism into this, but it's kind of this male sense that you have to have a conflict and a deadline, and you can't work things out unless you have that. And I suggested to the chair that we work on we used to do this all the time in these kinds of divisions. We'd have committee bills that we work it out as a committee bill and that we pass it. This bill might be a vehicle for that. I'm kind of looking at the language, but I would actually much rather work cooperatively and do a committee bill and get the full data on what the shutdown costs. And I'll point out that we never have the full data on what the shutdown costs, because as soon as we start looking as if we're approaching a shutdown, all state employees' work is impacted badly. People just really start worrying about their vacations and replanning their vacations. Can they do that? They start worrying about what kind of, arrangements they have to make. And so even if they're putting in the hours and the days, the productivity of state workers goes down dramatically, just even as we approach the shutdown. And anyone who's talked to anybody can see that. So I would hope that the committee, it's obviously the chair's prerogative, but I would hope that the committee would take up my suggestion and seriously work on this issue on a bipartisan basis. And it doesn't have to be my bill at all. I think similar Republican bills were submitted after the shutdown. Mine was the only one that I've tried to work through a couple of legislative sessions. But that's my only comments.
As I indicated to Representative Cotton, I would welcome that discussion. Further discussion? Representative Woodard, any further comment?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a good discussion. I think it's a better bill as a result of it, and I appreciate your support.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a question for you. If this bill were to become a Racino bill later in the process, whether on the Ways and Means Committee or on the floor, you had this discussion. I'm just asking if you are going to ask for it back in committee.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
If there's no further discussion, I will renew the motion to pass, that we recommend to pass House File 2003 as amended, and that it be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, I need to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Benson.
Members, next we have a bonding bill presentation from administration. And before us we have Commissioner Kronk and Assistant Commissioner Giancola. You may proceed. Right. Identify yourselves for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, I'm Spencer Kronk, the Commissioner for the Department of Administration. I'll be brief in my remarks and then pass it off to Nikki Giancola, the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities Management at the Department of Administration. It's my pleasure to present the Department of Administration's priorities for our 2012 capital budget request. For decades, admin has been strong stewards of capital dollars to preserve state-owned space. We recently revised our mission statement to make sure that we're providing the best value in government administrative services by emphasizing customer satisfaction, continuous improvement, and employee engagement. And I'll turn it over to Nikki to discuss the five priorities that we have in this bonding cycle.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Nikki Giancola from the Department of Administration. What you see up here right now are the considerations or influencing factors that the Department of Administration used this year when considering our priorities for capital bonding. And I won't tick off the entire list here, but you can see some of the significant influencing factors that went into our planning, and you will see most, if not all, of these themes in the projects that we present. Priority, high priority this year is the University Avenue Tunnel, and that is to the first point there about Central Corridor Light Rail Transit. That was a key factor in our planning process. And then, as in every year, we have a number of factors that go into our asset preservation consideration, and so the next few speak to that. And then finally, we in the Department of Administration have a leadership role enterprise-wide, and so a couple of our projects speak to that as well, that we're considering enterprise-wide needs as well as the facilities that we're responsible for here on the Capitol campus. So with that, I'd like to take a second and provide you some background for the Department of Administration, particularly for new members. The department is responsible for approximately 4.3 million square feet of space on the Capitol complex. The 22 buildings that we manage include office, warehouse, mail handling and storage space, conference and hearing rooms, food service, and sophisticated lab and data center space. It includes buildings of historic significance, such as the State Capitol and the Governor's Residence, which are both on the National Register of Historic Places, as well as the State Office Building and the Judicial Center. It also includes ceremonial space and grounds, over 30 distinct parking lots and ramps, as well as the physical plant to support it all. We provide working space for approximately 40 state agencies, including numerous boards, councils, and veterans organizations, and for the legislature and judiciary and other constitutional offices. We serve an average of over 7,600 tenants year-round and over 7,900 during session. Taking care of the facilities of the state of seat government is unique, and it's an awesome responsibility, and we take great pride in the reliability and efficiency with which we operate. Just a couple of recent highlights for us: we've reduced our operating expenses by over $1 million in the last couple of years. We've reduced energy consumption by 13.6% against our base of fiscal year 08, and we have a very high reliability and uptime standard that we are maintaining. Importantly, we're sustaining these efforts and reductions, and I want to point out that we do this in a number of ways. We benchmark. We follow a sound and disciplined preventive maintenance program. We carry out good after-action reporting and root cause analysis. We perform professional condition assessments on our buildings. We have highly skilled and trained professionals. And we utilize state-of-the-art building automation, energy management, and facility management technology tools. And we use all of this to support a very careful and rigorous capital planning process. Our total funding request this year is $32 million. The first and highest priority here is the University Avenue Tunnel at $6.6 million, asset preservation at $21 million, Capitol Campus parking replacement at $900,000, and this would be user-financed. Statewide Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account, CAPRA for short, at $2.5 million, and agency relocation at $1 million, and this would be general fund. The first project, the University Avenue Tunnel, I won't go into a whole lot of detail because this was heard in this committee, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. Representative Loeffler had a bill and presented it to this committee. But just as an overview, it's to provide for the construction of a pedestrian and materials handling tunnel that will extend northward from the Capitol building, and it passes below University Avenue, and it terminates at an access structure on Lot B. On slide 6 of your packet, and maybe move to that here, we thought you didn't see this the last time, but this is a better depiction of that tunnel. The purpose is to resolve one of the highest security vulnerabilities at the Capitol building, and that being the loading dock and the receipt of materials and deliveries right up next to the building. It also resolves handicap accessibility and security deficiencies related to the existing utility tunnel, and it also supports the Capitol Campus master plan strategy in that the tunnel will provide access for staff from Lot B, from the administration building, and also any future development that may occur on Lot B. I'll just highlight, too, that strong recommendations to complete this work have been given by the National Guard Vulnerability Assessment in 2006, the Committee on Capitol Complex Security. That report was issued April 1st of last year. And then the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board passed a resolution in June of last year strongly recommending construction of the tunnel. Our second project is asset preservation. Our request this year is focused on two buildings, the Capitol and the Centennial Office Building. Specifically, $13.5 million for the Capitol would be used for stone repairs and potentially other exterior elements on the outside of the building, $12.5 million, and then $1 million dedicated to critical HVAC, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning, electrical, and plumbing repairs on the Capitol building, and then $7.5 million for the Centennial Office Building to replace the main electrical switch system and secondary service wiring throughout the building and to replace system transformers and circuit breakers. If the capital is funded, and we're not going to really go into the capital, but I think many of you are aware that there is a capital preservation board that has been working on the capital itself. If the capital would be funded this session, we would reduce our asset preservation request to $10 million, and those funds would be directed to, again, the Centennial Office Building, the switchgear, and the primary electrical work that we need to take care of. And then also about $2.5 million to our most urgent exterior building, sidewalk, curb, retaining wall for the Capitol campus. So I just wanted to make that clear. Our third project is we're calling Capitol Campus Parking Replacement at $900,000. This request is to provide for pre-design and design for a new multi-level parking structure to replace surface lot parking that's currently provided under a lease agreement with Sears. We refer to it as Lot X, but it's just west of the transportation building. We lease currently over 600 spaces there. A recent change in position by Sears indicates that the state's ability to negotiate future extensions to the parking lease is at risk, and it's due principally to their interest in development having to do with Central Corridor. The lease was recently amended and to extend for only 2 years. Typically, we had been getting a five-year extension, and it was at a substantial increase in cost. Previously, it had been $1,775 a stall and $1,700 a month for security, and they've upped that now to $2,975 a stall and $2,700 a month for security. So I think there's evidence there that this may be short-term for us, and so we would like to advance this project so that we can get ahead of it and start replacing those lost stalls.
Assistant Commissioner, I have a question from a member, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering more about this parking project, going from 635 to 400 spaces, whether that creates a shortfall or what the projected need is. And then I know that the garage over by the judicial building is basically quarter, or at least at one time, maybe it's been a while since I was there, but you had to bring quarters and kind of plug them in order to use that garage. And I wonder if we have a little bit more of a current model of payment for a new garage that would be built over at Sears and kind of the capacity, expectations, and so on.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, great questions. To the first one, we believe that it's possible, right, with what we have going here, that a couple of hundred spaces could be absorbed into the different lots that we have currently. We also manage parking on an oversell basis, meaning that we actually, there's a percentage that we calculate based on the fact that we're not assigning stalls, so we can oversell our contracts and get more contracts out of that. And we believe between those two factors, we can replace with an approximately 400 stall parking structure and still do okay. And then,
well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I'll follow up with a kind of another question when we get back to the payment system. But I mean, one of the big issues I think at the Capitol during session is the lack of parking for members of the public, and generally speaking, the difficulty in figuring out where you're supposed to park, how you're supposed to get into the building, all those kind of things. And you know, it seems like if we're engaging on this question and looking at the Sears lot and turning that into a garage, we should have some discussion about you know, whether it's easy for the public to get there, whether there's, you know, signs pointing people there to public parking, whether we have ample spots, non-contract spots available in the garage and so forth. Because I do think it's one of the in addition to safety and security, I think one of the serious downsides of the Capitol complex is getting in and out for members of the public.
You can. I've got a question too, and in regards to the parking. if you want to follow up with Representative Winkler before I ask my question. This is a statement, but...
No, it was to comment on those concerns and see if this could be addressed in this plan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I'm positive that we could figure out a way to engage all stakeholders. I know that when we initially did the Capitol complex parking policy, there were a number of stakeholders involved in making those decisions. This request is for the pre-design and design, and this would be the ideal time to engage with stakeholders. Location is always an issue, no matter which stakeholder, and public parking has always been an issue as well. But I'm sure that we could work together and figure out the best avenue for assigning parking and working that into the policy.
My question, in terms of looking at the project and the debt service that would be required, I guess it's assumed. Maybe you can enlighten us a little bit in terms of how much more additionally that we're going to be paying for parking. I mean, I think that's an assumption that's been made that we will be all paying more for it, but have you determined what that increase percentage might be?
Mr. Chair, I haven't. I don't know if anyone from plant management is here. I think they've been doing the calculations based on the fact that this would be user financed, and they believe that we could handle that within the parking fund, but we could certainly get back to you on that with the calculation.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it would be important to understand that the fee structure may need to change in order to accommodate that debt service, and everybody around the table here is going to pay a little bit more. It's just how much more that we're going to have to pay. Please continue.
Okay. And just to follow up, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, on the metered parking, we are working in that our newest lot, Lot W, which is over by the Stassen building, the newest surface lot, has the newer technology meters, and we are hoping to go to these smart meters that pay by credit card and trying those out. I know that our plant management department has been in conversation with both the city of St. Paul and the city of Minneapolis as they've used those meters. There's been a few issues, but I'm pretty sure that we can consider that as we work forward on this project as well.
Representative Winkler, another follow-up question.
Mr. Chair, I guess just, I can't think of anywhere else I ever park that has the same meter in the garage system. Why don't we just use the traditional gate at the outside and at the entrance and the exits, and you don't necessarily have to staff it, but what's the reason for this kind of peculiar system, and why wouldn't we migrate to something that's a little bit more consistent with people's everyday experience?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I hope to do that with this project. Obviously, at the facilities that we have a number of technologies. We've had input on certain lots about the arms, and that just doesn't work when people are trying to get in and out. It's a testy thing for some people, but with a parking structure with a ramp, we will be using the latest technology, and always. I mean, our plant management department, the parking group down there, hears from a lot of people all of the time about the hassles with metering and things like that. But I think as we work on this, if we get a good stakeholder group getting good input from them, we can consider all of that as we construct the ramp.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we leave the topic of parking and Sears and all that, I'm wondering, and maybe this is for a different committee hearing, what are Sears? What is Sears planning?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't know that I can speak to it. I've not had any direct contact with Sears, but these two indications, the rate and the shorter-term lease, have indicated to us that this is a short-term proposition to us. I don't know how long the state has actually been doing this, but it's been long-term on a lease. And I think it's been a cordial relationship so far. Our real estate and construction services group is in contact with Sears. But obviously, anything along the corridor for Central Corridor is highly sought out property right at the moment. And so we're just trying to get ahead of the game and try to replace some of those lost stalls.
Mr. Chair, I think that's very smart. I think this area is going to change a lot when light rail comes in for the better. And I think it's going to, there are going to be a lot of hot properties around here. And so to the extent we can do things now and lock in rates or prices now, I think that would be a good thing. We'll see what Sears does. I hope it's something that improves the area. Thanks.
I think it'd be fair to say, too, that it'd be interesting for the committee to hear a little bit more about the plans regarding, certainly there's some efficiencies. I don't know that we'd need quite as many people if we had to go around and collect meters, and then just the idea that it's more efficient. And I think Representative Winkler is probably getting to, he would like to see it more efficient as well. Please continue.
Okay, the last couple of projects are what I'd call our enterprise projects. The first one is statewide CAPRA. The purpose of this account is to provide and support emergency repairs and unanticipated hazardous material abatement needs for state-owned buildings throughout Minnesota. It's a statewide account managed by admin. Examples of the use of this fund are asbestos and lead abatement, emergency pipe, roof leaks, structural repairs, fire and flood, water damage, that type of thing, dealing with soil contamination, unknown, and replacement of failed building components such as air conditioning and boilers, water heaters, and such. We report on this annually, January 15th. Current balance available in this account is approximately $3.3 million. And just like to point out that it's a statewide account, and in recent years, the state agencies that have been served with this account are admin, Purpich Center for the Arts Education, Corrections, DEED, the Historical Society, DHS, Military Affairs, DNR, and Veterans Affairs. And then our final project is a $1 million request. This again is general fund agency relocation. It's an enterprise-wide account, again, managed by the Department of Administration, and its purpose is to provide funding for unanticipated or advantageous relocations of state operations. Because these events are typically of an unforeseen nature for which the agency has not had time or the planning to program funds, the lack of access to relocation funding can create actually a disincentive to beneficial moves. So when agencies are faced with this type of situation, and those situations could be anything from a landlord not renewing an agency's lease, a facility is sold, an agency needs to reduce space, a reorg needs to be implemented, or an agency has the ability to substantially reduce its rent, then they would typically look to this account. A recent example, but didn't need to go into this fund, was the Duluth Government Services project. We have a number of state agencies in a building there that is returning to, my understanding, the city, and we had an agreement that is ending, I think, of June of next year, or maybe it's this year. June of this year. And so early on, we were talking to agencies about their need to move, and first question was, is there any agency relocation? And this particular account has been drained for a number of years. The last appropriation that we received was, I think, in 2005. So we have the ability to talk to folks and help them plan, but we don't actually have the monetary ability to make these moves happen. So it's a good example of the use of this account, and our request this time is $1 million, and that would hopefully facilitate some of the moves that we see possibly coming up as a result of reorgs and consolidations. So with that, those are our 2012 bonding requests and end of our prepared remarks, but stand for any questions that you might have.
Thanks. Representative Murray first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question to the testifiers on the $21 million for Capitol Building, and maybe you stated a little bit of this and I didn't pick up on it, but it seems to me that we have a need for 260-some million to fully complete all the repairs over at the Capitol. If we spend this $21 million, will we still need to spend $260 million? Is this just kind of a stopgap measure that's going to take care of the most pressing needs? And so we're kind of spending 10% of what we're going to need to do anyway, but we'll need to spend it again?
Sure. Would everyone like to answer that one?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative. I can certainly speak to the fact that, you know, for over 100 years since this building was constructed, repair work has been needed, and we've been doing that repair work on a piecemeal basis for the last few decades. And about 15 years ago, it was determined that a large-scale comprehensive restoration effort was needed. Those efforts have produced a number of different pre-designed plans, and the latest one, it does have a price tag of $241 million. That would, you know, as I said, comprehensive restore the building. If that money is not allocated, or if that funding is not provided this session, then we still need to do basic repairs for the building, and that's what this allotment does. It's a, you know, we've, as the Assistant Commissioner mentioned, if a large-scale bill was passed, then we would reduce that number from $21 million to $10 million and not have any of that money allocated, because that work would be covered in the comprehensive effort.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up on that then. So is there any way that we could figure out if $21 million of spending this year, if we spent $40 million, would that replace the electrical and plumbing, or $60 million instead of? I know you have to do deferred maintenance. I know you need to keep things operating.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe a little bit bigger investment would take care of it, and so we wouldn't have to do it over.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative, what would be taken care of in our asset preservation request is essentially the exterior of the building. Obviously, we've been working on it. We've had a stone assessment. There is a lot of exterior work to keep the elements out. That work would become part of the comprehensive restoration project, the $241 million project. So, and that's the basis for reducing this. It would become and be wrapped up in the comprehensive project. But when we were planning this, and should the capital restoration not go forward, as the commissioner said, we would still need these asset preservation funds to do that work. That's the most pressing work, high priority, to keep the elements out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before I got a question from Representative Stensrud, but I'm curious on whether or not the engineering studies have been finalized to take care of or mitigate the vibration from the light rail. That issue's been addressed.
Mr. Chair, actually, I'd like to call Wayne Wozlowski from our Real Estate and Construction Services Department down here. He has been working for literally years on with the Met Council on this, and I think he can best address that question.
Please address
Mr. Chair,
members, by yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wayne Wozlowski, Director of Real Estate and Construction Services. And this has been a concern for legislators and I think all stakeholders regarding the LRT project. We do have a memorandum of understanding with Met Council. I think some on the committee have maybe seen that memorandum, which requires the Met Council as part of the project to do pre-construction testing of what's the baseline vibration that happens just on a daily basis with the traffic that is going on University Avenue. And then throughout the construction process, they have to have a vibration monitoring program in place, including what the threshold is, what's the standard to what's an acceptable level of vibration, or what notification process anytime that threshold is exceeded, and then a follow-up to say, okay, how are we going to mitigate that and avoid that from happening in the future. So that, I do have to point out, this is not a project, we're obviously not managing the LRT project, but we're working with the Met Council to make sure that the appropriate measures are in place to mitigate and avoid any damage related to vibration.
Is it your understanding that that's been factored into the actual cost of the light rail system?
Mr. Chair, members, there's two pieces to this. There's one is during the construction phase, and so the Met Council has included in their contract requirements with the contractor this monitoring program. So that's factored into the cost of the overall construction. Within a year after they start revenue operations, there's monitoring that happens during that period. There's no long-term monitoring after, as the ongoing operation. So it's really just that first year after it's operational. There shouldn't be significant changes from year one to year 10 on vibration due to LRT.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The priority schedule here as to what you feel is the most important. What is the most critical project that has to be done of all of these? I mean, to me, I see when I put in requests from our area for other committees, they have a priority from the department or from the agency. I think of the bridge that went over the Mississippi River and Elk River, and they said, well, you're 20 years out. No way are you going to get this. Well, then come to find out, if the community would come up with the money for doing the planning and the architectural and all that kind of stuff, we got moved up. We were only 3 years out. I look at some of these things. The University Avenue Tunnel, I think there's a tunnel there already, but you got to prioritize as number one. What's the most critical? What has to be done? I don't see that the tunnel has to be done. I mean, yeah, you want it done, but I don't see it as a critical thing that has to be done.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's a priority because of timing. If the state is going to build a tunnel under University Avenue, now is time critical. The existing tunnel is essentially a utility tunnel that has been turned into and used as a pedestrian tunnel, but in no way is it conducive to materials handling, public pedestrian traffic, as well as our utilities that are basically running in there. They're in conduit and things like that, but they are exposed. And if you've ever been in this particular tunnel, well, any of the tunnels come spring, they leak, and it's almost like a rainforest in the admin tunnel. So what this is really, it's a one-time opportunity to take advantage and construct the tunnel. It would be impractical and cost prohibitive to do it after the tracks are laid. And maybe Representative Loeffler went through this, but track installation is set to begin in April of this year, and it's scheduled to complete by November, and then all of the work, the landscaping, the road construction, the stations and things like that, would be completed by 2014. So we've been working with the Met Council to try to time this right, planning to do it in conjunction with it to keep the costs as low as possible. But again, it's the state's one-time opportunity to do this. And also, I need to point out, it's been strongly recommended, those three citations that I had. And it's the plan. It has been the plan to mitigate that high priority and vulnerability of the materials handling and loading dock right up at the Capitol.
Follow up, Representative. Thank you. Members, we need to move on. We have another bill that we need to hear. I want to thank the Commissioner and Assistant Commissioner for your presentation. Will be considered as part of our bonding priority or request that goes to the Bonding Committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Members, we now have House File 2169, Representative Beard, be making a presentation.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for your attention to House File 2169 today. I will be offering an A2 amendment. If I could have somebody move the bill, and members, and Mr. Chairman, just hot off the press is actually the first engrossment of the work of the last committee that some of you actually sit on. This is the engrossment of the DE1 amendment we adopted in State Gov Policy, or Government Operations Committee, I guess.
And Representative, I will move the amendment.
You're moving 2169. Mr. Chairman, I believe the correct motion will be to refer it to Environment and Energy Committee.
Thank you, Representative. And we'll move this so that it will go to the Environmental Finance Committee.
Environment.
I think we're just getting 2169, the first engrossment passed around.
wait till that happens, and then we'll.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, did we move the A2 amendment?
No, I was waiting for this.
Okay, that's fine.
I did make a motion to move the A2 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to talk a little bit about the genesis of the bill and its a little history, or would you like me to wait?
Just wait just a couple of seconds. We'll get the rest of it passed out, and then you can get started. Members, we have a motion to for the A2 amendment to bring it to the authors.
Mr. Chairman, on the A2 amendment, I know it's the first committee of the morning, but on line 1.5, between the words 14 and 19, the word "and" should become a 2. The intention is to delete and replace 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19, not just 14 and 19.
Okay. So I move to incorporate the author's amendment.
Thank you.
You can make your presentation then.
Thank you, members. House File 2169 is a culmination of work that's begun a couple of years ago. Some of us have become a little more, especially as we have time in the legislature, realize how much law actually happens outside of this place through other actions, most of which we actually promulgate here and order the agencies to do. There are, however, rules that the agencies just bring forward on their own from time to time, and there's a lot of federal compliance work that happens that kind of catches us unawares. House Bill 2169 is an attempt to reassert and reinsert the legislative authority that already exists in statute over the rulemaking process and the rules that already exist in the agencies for which each committee is responsible. The bill also sharpens the teeth of the legislature just a little bit by also adding the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which meets year-round and is available all the time. We are not so much. As one of the entities that must be notified of a rule that is to be changed, amended, dropped, or I guess just those three things, either made a new one, changed existing one, or if they're declared obsolete, duplicative, and they're going to drop a rule, Legislative Coordinating Commission will also be included in that circle of notification. It reasserts the rules and the authority that already exists for legislators to object to a rule that is to be changed, dropped, or created, so that with a certain threshold of insistence, a rule becomes a bill in the next legislative session. Members, this is all under, I believe, Chapter 14, and I know Representative Kahn will be weighing in on this, because when my 10 years here, there have been two experts I've recognized in this body, Representative Seifert and Representative Kahn, on the rulemaking process, and we have learned a great deal by listening to their comments. With the development of this bill and trying to understand the issue, I'm drinking from a fire hose and trying to understand Chapter 14, the rulemaking process, and how it works. I can only imagine how you poor folks must feel. And so I'm attempting to try to gather into one place in this House File 2169 all of those rules, all the statutory authority that does exist, and bring the legislature more back into the loop to share responsibility for the rules that are being promulgated by our agencies. As the bill progressed through the first committee, there were some amendments that were made. Concerns were heard from the agencies, and I've attempted to accommodate them. What you have in front of you, too, with the A2 amendment now, Mr. Chairman, is, again, another attempt to try to work to make this reasonable while still holding true to the original intent, which is to clarify and reassert legislative authority that already exists, to sharpen its focus, and to make the agencies realize that we indeed have a rule, a role to play in the rulemaking process. With that, if you'd like Mr. Shepherd to maybe specifically talk about what changes with the A2 amendment, I'd appreciate his comments.
We'll do that and then take a vote on the A2 amendment. Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll walk through the A2 amendment. On the first section of the A2 amendment, amends section 1 of the bill, which deals with the law that allows the Legislative Coordinating Commission or the House or Senate Governmental Operations Committees to object to rules. The amendments that affect page 1, line 17 and 18 of the first engrossment change some of the grounds for committees to object, so that committees would be able to object if a rule is obsolete, unnecessary, or duplicative. Then on page 2, on lines 14 to 19 are deleted. This relates to the ability of the Legislative Coordinating Commission or a Governmental Operations Committee to object to a rule. And the new language in the A2 amendment provides that if one of the committees files an objection, it would notify the appropriate policy and budget committees with jurisdiction over the subject matter of the proposed rule. On page 3, lines 12 to 20 of the first engrossment are deleted. This relates to the work of the Sunset Advisory Commission, and the bill is proposing that agencies that are subject to sunset review would provide additional information about their rules to the Sunset Advisory Commission. And on the amendment, on lines 1.9 to 1.18 of the amendment, contains the new contents of what the legislature would be asking agencies to provide to the Sunset Commission. On page 4, line 22 of the bill, this also relates to the work of the Sunset Advisory Commission, and it is making a change in what the commission would be looking at when it's looking at the agency's rules. The new language asks the commission to determine if any of the rules are obsolete, unnecessary, or duplicative. On the bottom of the A2 amendment, page 1, and continuing on to the top of page 2, is a new section of the bill. This section, something similar to what was in the original bill, Representative Beard took it out in a previous committee and is putting similar language back in now. This relates to agencies not trying to implement or enforce policies, guidelines, or similar pronouncements that haven't been adopted by rules. The one thing that's different about this amendment from the original bill is that at the very beginning of the section, it starts with "except as specifically authorized by law." So where these pronouncements are authorized by law, for example, for the Revenue Department to issue interpretive bulletins, this new language would not affect those. On the next part of the amendment, changes page 6 of the bill. This relates to giving notice to the legislature about proposed rules, and it requires that annually, if an agency is proposing to adopt, amend, or repeal its rules, it would have to give notice of its rulemaking docket. That means its plans to the chairs and ranking minority members of the appropriate legislative committees. The amendment that affects page 7 of the bill is dealing with the statement of need and reasonableness that's required under current law. The language is defining when the new language is asking for an assessment of cumulative effect of the rule with other rules, and then on the language of the amendment defines what a cumulative effect means. And finally, Mr. Chair, at the very end of the bill, section 10 currently requires certain agencies to report to the governor, the LCC, and legislative committees relating to its rules. That section is deleted from the first engrossment, and the language you see at the very end of the A2 amendment is substituted for it.
All right. See no questions?
Yep.
Representative?
Just a clarifying comment on Section 10. I believe the original bill members actually repealed the rules as well as put the deadline in. This just reinstates the deadlines but does repeal the repeal. of the rules, if you understand that. Thank you.
Seeing no questions, all in favor of the A2 amendment, say yay.
Yay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I can't.
To your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for amending the bill and making it even a little better as it goes through the process here. I think the reason we're in this committee is primarily the fiscal note, but I'm happy to stand for any questions. And I do have some people who have helped me with this bill over the last 2 years. Miss Lisa Frenette, excuse me, has been just doing yeoman's work in helping pull some of these things together. In the fiscal note that you have here today, members, it's not complete. I believe I was asked to tell you that. I think 14 agencies have been asked to weigh in on what they think compliance would cost. Three of them have responded in the fiscal note you have in front of you. And I'll be happy to stand for questions, or they may want to speak to it. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to remind this committee that this exercise, like most good ideas, this has been done before. This idea is not unique with me, although I was pleased to find out that others have thought of it, because I did not know that until I began to work on this process. In 1998, there was a report on the growth of rules. I have all of this in this tons of paperwork up here that resulted in the legislature in 2000 actually passing a bill to form a task force of 8 legislative members to look at all the rules, much like we're doing with the Sunset Commission now. And every agency was ordered to bring forward an overview of all of their rules, and they were ordered to absorb the cost of that within their agency budgets. They did actually yeoman's work. I have actually three of them here with me this morning that reported to the legislature on August 1st, 2003. Now, I will note that the legislature gave them 3 years to comply. I think my bill gives them a year, but I'll tell you why I think we can make that work in just a moment and hear otherwise if you think differently. But what I want to point out this morning is, first of all, the PCA's report, their summary and documents. This is just an encapsulation of their report. The cost of preparing that report in compliance with the 2000 law was $9,686 plus almost $68 for photocopies. So we're somewhere south of $10,000 for this report. I think the fiscal note probably shows you otherwise. Here is the PCA's or DNR's report. DNR's report is much more substantial because they cover a much more territory, I think, than PCA does. Their report in August 1st of 2003 was prepared, including copying costs, $5,600. I also have the Ag Department's here, but they didn't, because their report was only 6 pages long, they didn't even put a fiscal note on their report that they sent us in 2003. Members, I think every decade is probably good for a new generation of legislators to pay attention to these matters. The statement of need and reasonableness that already exists in law, in which every agency complies with and they promulgate rules, already exist, or they sure should exist, and that those are basically the things we're asking for. One last comment in relationship to the fiscal note and the compliance with the fiscal note. I would direct the members' attentions to Governor Dayton's Executive Order 11-32, which instructs the Environmental Quality Board to basically do this work by November 15th of 2012, have it all put together, prepared, and examined, and by January 15th of 2013 to prepare the report on all the environmental rules concerning the 5 agencies in the last section of the bill. They're already going to be working on that via executive order. My hunch is there's probably going to be some economies of scale and some work that will be done for the governor's office that can be transferred to these reports and put here. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Ms. Roberts, you have some comments about the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, members, I just wanted to clarify what you have in your packets. Mm-hmm. As Representative Beard noted, the fiscal note was assigned to 14 agencies, different agencies. Three of those agencies are under the jurisdiction of this finance committee. Mm-hmm. So we only printed that portion of the fiscal note rather than the 40 other pages that are under other finance committee's jurisdictions. And some of those agencies have completed their portion, some have not. We just asked the agencies under this committee's jurisdiction to finalize it for today. And just real quickly, you'll see The three agencies are the legislature, the Secretary of State, and Department of Administration. The legislature is showing some potential costs from this. The discussion, you'll see a table on page 3. The two main costs are additional staff costs that would be directed towards the requirements of this bill, and those would be absorbed by current House and Senate staff. And then the potential for some additional member costs if House and Senate policy committees were required to meet during the interim to respond to rules, members could potentially request reimbursement for travel and lodging, not for per diem, but for travel and lodging. And so the fiscal note does show a $77,000 estimated cost for that, but that is, again, up for discussion in this committee, whether they think that's a reasonable cost. The other two agencies are not showing costs, although they do have some discussion of, for example, the Secretary of State says they're not planning any rulemaking at this time, or they don't have anything on the horizon, but there could be some additional staff costs involved. And similarly with Department of Administration. So that's what you have in front of you.
Representative Boleyn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beard, I think you said at the beginning that this encompasses new rules, changed rules, or dropped rules. And I'm wondering if it would include rules that were adopted by state agencies many years ago but not enforced until recently.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, as I understand it, and I'm going to be maybe lean on my expert witness for help here, any rule that is in existence is available for the legislature and the committees that regard those rules, or those, yeah, those rules that have jurisdiction, can call them up at any time. I think it requires 5 members, and it requires a filing with the Secretary of State to notify that there's a concern about that. Certainly while this legislature is in session, we can ask any agency to come in at any time. It's in the interim where we get a little slack because we're living other lives and doing other things. This bill also would add the Legislative Coordinating Commission, which meets pretty much year-round, Mr. Chairman, if I understand it correctly, and probably has a little more constant attention to this place and the rules. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question or sheds some light on the process.
Representative Boleyn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, so then the Legislative Commission, that would it be required that a state agency give that Legislative Commission notice that they're going to enforce a rule that was in place many years ago but they aren't enforcing until recently?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not the intent of the bill. The rules are already in place. They're in place. If there is a change to the rule, they're going to make it obsolete, declare it duplicative, or change the rule. Then they have to give notification. Actually, under existing statute, expanded notification if this bill becomes law. But not existing. Existing rules are existing rules, and they're just there.
Representative Boleyn.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Beard. I guess, you know, I would prefer that it maybe would encompass that because, of course, with the wild rice sulfate standard, that's a rule that was put in place in the 1970s, and state agencies simply weren't enforcing it until special interest groups brought it to light wanting to stop the mining industry. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know how many rules are out there, and when special interest groups want to stop mining or logging or farming, and all of a sudden they bring that rule to the attention of the state agencies, and it really can drastically change things. So maybe it would be good to take a look at expanding that a little more.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, thank you for the comments. And yes, this bill will be going to environment next, but I'm sure we're going to be engaging this discussion. One of the purposes of the bill of having the review process, in fact, this legislature last year when it passed the Sunset Review Commission, was that the agencies are staged over an 8-year period, I believe it is, so that all rules are supposed to be brought forward for review and to shine a little bit of light on them. I think that's a great idea, and this bill reinforces that notion that all rules will be reviewed over the next 8 years by the Sunset Commission.
Thank you.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, thanks a lot for all the work you've done, Ms. Frenette, and Mr. Grooms, too. I know you work very hard on it, and I appreciate the fact that at every stop you seem to have truly listened and tried to improve the bill and make it better,
thank
and
you.
I think it's really come a long way. I have a couple, first a comment. It just bears repeating, I think, as you've heard often in these committees that, you know, rules and administrative rules don't just sort of pop up. They're created because we tell agencies to do them. So there's no mystery to it. We can just not authorize it. We can pass laws that don't call for any rulemaking authority, or we can be explicit to say that there shall be no rules as to a particular area. So ultimately, the buck does stop with us, and we already have the power to do that. We also, as we discussed in the last committee, this is under the category of powers we didn't know we had often, that committees already have certain power under the law here to make objections and to make course corrections. So we already have that. It's sort of like the power, as we discussed in last committee, that a lot of people don't know, that legislative committees have the power to subpoena witnesses. I've never seen it here. This is my seventh session, or what is it, eighth session, I guess. I've never seen it happen. It takes a supermajority of a committee, but we could technically compel someone here under some penalty to testify under oath. We have a lot of powers that we don't use, and one of them is to curtail or eliminate certain rulemaking already in current law. With that said, on the bill, and I know you've addressed this issue before, but as amended, I'm wondering whether you could address it again. You know, when it comes to the Sunset Commission involvement here, obviously the Sunset Commission doesn't have a whole lot of resources, and how do you address the feasibility going forward of that fact, assuming that we're going to keep that situation on autopilot and that the Sunset Commission is not going to have vast resources at its disposal? What's your response to that? How do we address that challenge?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, thank you for the question again. In the original House file as introduced, remember I pulled the five environmental agencies, we call them, forward to sunset all their rules and force it through the Sunset Commission by August 1st of next year, I believe it was. That's when I got another shot of the fire hose about what the Sunset Commission actually does. And members, I actually have the legislation and the schedule here in my piles of paper. But just to sum up for you, the Sunset Commission runs for a period of years, and they actually have a program of work, I believe, that's been staggered. An agency a year, or maybe two if they're the smaller agencies, for a couple of years. The five environmental agencies, which was the biggest one that engendered the most discussion, are actually out in 2018, 19, and 2020, I believe it is. So that's why we amended the bill to let that plan of work stand on the schedule that was already thought of by other thoughtful people. I would hope that if the program of work gets to be too intense for the Sunset Commission, that they would make a case to this body that we would up the amperage of that committee and put some resources at their disposal, because personally I'm enthused about their work and about the potential for actually reviewing the place, and it because it's going to have some longevity, unlike the commission which was formed in the year 2000, which apparently met and then went away. This one is going to transcend several legislators. There will be many people coming behind us that will sit in these chairs and look at the rule books and think the same thing I thought when I got here, and I know that you did, Representative Simon. Holy cow, who's making all these rules and how's this happening? It's an ongoing educational process, and I think the Sunset Commission has a huge role to play in keeping us on the cutting edge of how this happens, keeping us very aware of how the rulemaking works. So I hope going forward Sunset Commissions are able to persuade leadership that they might need some more budget.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, I agree with you 100%. I think this illustrates why we may be at a fork in the road when it comes to the Sunset Commission. If we're going to give them, if they're really going to have to do some meaty work here, as they will when it comes to these five agencies that you describe in 2018 or 2019, we should either make sure that the Sunset Commission has the resources to do real work, or we should go in another direction and have that sort of sunsetting mechanism go elsewhere. That's for future legislatures to decide, perhaps, but I think that's pretty important. I have a question about something else in the bill as well, and this came up, I think, in the last committee as well, and this is on page 2, line 2.22. Under current law, there's no specific evidentiary standard in here, but you impose a clear and convincing evidence standard. That's the highest, pretty much, well, in this context, probably as high as you could go. And there really isn't one before, and I guess I'm wondering why that standard, and then also how would this work in the future if there was court review? You're going to have the Court of Appeals potentially looking at this and deciding, if I can get my head around this, the Court of Appeals would have to decide whether or not the committee correctly imposed a clear and convincing evidence standard. and it's just not something that is typically done at that level, as I understand it.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering if you or Ms. Frenette or someone could comment on that. It seems quite unusual, and it seems quite strict. That's a pretty high standard.
It is.
Representative Baird.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It is, and we'll talk about that in just a second. If I can go back, just close the loop on the previous question about the Sunset Commission, I noticed that this legislature did appropriate $200,000 in the 12-13 biennium for the LCC for the purposes of staffing. And I hope going forward, previous or next legislatures, subsequent legislatures will do the same. On to the clear and convincing evidence. Mr. Chairman, I've got a note here that this is an off-ramp of sorts, but if I could, I would like to refer to Ms. Frenette to explain what we were doing there and why we put that language in here, because it's very important.
Ms. Frenette, identify yourself for the record, please. And
Mr. Chair, Committee Members, Representative Simon, my name is Lisa Frenette, and I've been working on this language with Representative Beard for the past couple of years. Clear and convincing evidence was put in there as it goes to, as Representative Beard, a segue to a judicial review, and we believe that the criteria set forward in a SONAR, it doesn't come to the legislature, it goes to a judicial review for the enforcement of the rule, that the SONAR should be set at the highest standard, and the agency should prove through the SONAR in clear and convincing evidence that they should promulgate this rule.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I can give an anecdotal story of one in a committee I chair, transportation, of one that we're struggling with this right now, where, by the way, members, we didn't ask for this rule, but public safety is promulgating a rule concerning red flashing lights on funeral procession guides. I can't remember, escorts, I think. These are the legal kind of escorts. apparently something this came out of somewhere that caused the agency some heartburn, and they're promulgating rules about red lights. They're going to have a profound economic impact on a lot of people who've been around for a long time. Our request in the legislature is make that a bill, which they have and we're arguing about now. But one of the things that the committee is choking on is the clear and convincing evidence that they seem to be offering seems to be arguing in the other direction, that there's no need for the rule they're trying to promulgate. I'm not a lawyer, Representative Simon, so I can't speak to it beyond that, except to tell you that I have had some experience with that, where I wish I could see actual data for clear and convincing evidence, because as a chairman of the committee, I'm very willing to be convinced, I haven't seen that high bar met, at least in that particular instance. I'm sure if there was a case to be made, that bar could be met.
Representative, we've got one other person that would like to ask, one other member would like to ask a question, and we've got a few people that like to testify. I do want to get to a vote before we adjourn. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Representative Beard, mm-hmm. I'm a bit puzzled because I don't understand. A week and a half ago or so, we had a bill that had to do with rules and having a moratorium, and that the legislators, if there was a need for rules, the legislators were going to become rulemakers, and that moved on, if I remember correctly.
It's back in our committee.
It's back in our committee, okay.
Yes.
And so how does this bill interface with that one, and is this a priority before we consider the other one again then?
I'm going to allow for the representative to speak, but this is a better bill. Representative Beard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's exactly what I was going to
say. I was hoping that was the answer. But I missed something if we talked about that already. But
Representative Beard, more complete answer than mine.
More complete answer, but yes, Representative Murphy, thank you for the question. I will admit that a couple years ago, I had a bill that pretty much just said, blow the whole thing up, we'll start over. After calming down and taking a deep breath and flying, we have a phrase that's called slow hands. Slow hands. Slow down, everybody. That would not work. This reflects that work, which is why I've had Mr. Grooms and Ms. Frenette helping me, pro bono, I might add, because they, as representatives in other aspects of the business community, recognize that rules are important to an orderly life and to make commerce work. But that there was an opportunity here, I've been learning, and I'm still learning, to f- for the legislature to learn the role that they actually have and the responsibility we have. So I've tried to draft a bill here that encompasses that perspective and still asserts our authority and our responsibility for the rules that are out there, members, but doesn't do it in a drastic fashion that just kicks over the apple cart and has us start putting them all together. So, yes, I think this is a better bill than the other ones making their way through. And at the end of the day, when the legislative evolutionary process is done, we'll see if this one doesn't prevail. I'd like you to help me do that.
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Murphy.
Representative Beard, I think I would like you to do that. And I was kind of scared about becoming a rulemaker, and now I may soon announce that I will run again.
Glad to help.
Thank you very much, Representative Beard.
You're welcome, Representative.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, I just want to follow up on the lines 2.20 through 2.25 that Representative Simon was talking about. I think the concern is not, well, first of all, I think there's a concern about a clear and convincing evidence standard, putting the burden on an agency. I think that's, and we've talked a little bit about that with Ms. Frenette and Mr. Grooms. I think that's too demanding a standard.
Okay.
But the real issue to me is that this would have to be shown every time there was an enforcement action. And so you'd have to be relitigating that all the time. Plus, if this is at the Court of Appeals, an evidence standard isn't really used at the Court of Appeals. So I think that some work needs to be done from a legal perspective. And I guess the real question is, I think this bill has really demonstrated a lot of willingness to make this bill work and be bipartisan. And so I think this section needs more work, and I guess the question is it going to civil law at some point to work through some of these issues? Because that's probably the committee that is best suited to do it, all respect to Chair McNamara aside.
Mm-hmm. Representative Beard, I see Mr. Grooms is at so either one of you want to address that?
Well, let me start with the second part of the question, because I think I have more to say about that. We originally were to go to Commerce Committee next for some commerce issues, but the environmental issues seemed to make it prudent to make a stop in Chair McNamara's committee. I know Commerce has asked for the bill, too. Civil law isn't one I'd anticipated, but if it needs to go there to vet this, we can. I'm sure Mr. Grooms will have more to say about this, but I'll tell you that the reason this language was in here originally was not for companies or persons who felt like they were aggrieved by a rule to hang a lawsuit on this peg. That's not what it was for. It was designed as an off-ramp for the agencies or the rulemaking authorities who were making rules and were being challenged by us, that they could, with clear and convincing evidence, assert that, no, this rule was necessary. It didn't have to wait for the subsequent legislative session and go ahead and assert the rule anyhow without resorting to emergency rulemaking authority, which is preserved under my bill. If Mr. Grooms feels he needs to add more, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for if he could comment.
Mr. Grooms, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Lloyd Grooms with the law firm Winthrop & Weinstein. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Winkler and Representative Simon, to clarify this particular phrase, our clause. The clause is in there if the agency decides to proceed with rulemaking after the objection is filed, and only if the agency decides to go forward with the rulemaking, it would then have to prove in court by clear and convincing that the objection raised by either the LCC or the committee was not valid. That's the intent of this. So it's really more in terms of should the agency decide to proceed, not the rulemaking itself.
Mr. Chairman, but my commitment to the members of that are asking the question is if there's a way this could be made better and made it more clear that this is an off-ramp for the agencies and not for somebody committing commerce that wants to use it for a lawsuit, I'm more than happy to work that language through.
For the sake of time, is that acceptable to you? Do you have additional questions around this subject?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I think, I understand your intention. I think this section needs some work, and I have total confidence that we'll do that. And don't need to hold this up today in order to work on that. But I do think the language, as drafted, doesn't quite work.
and I think that clear and convincing is too high a burden, and I'll deal with that. Just on a separate topic, but on page one, the objection to the rules, we have this language in here about obsolete and duplicative rules. And it just an observation there. I don't know that courts are all that great in the end at deciding whether something is obsolete and duplicative. Mm-hmm. That's more of a policy judgment, I guess. So that's just another area where I think we need to make the legal review section work with the language of the bill. But again, I'm confident we can find a way to do that.
Thank you.
Representative Beard.
Noted in my notes. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Simon. Just thank you, Mr. Chair. One more point on the clear and convincing. Maybe one way to do it, and this can be a discussion had offline, is to just beef up the sonar standard and do it in the sonar and not afterwards after the objection. Just a thought. Representative Beard.
Thank you. Noted.
I don't see any further questions from members. I know we have a couple of folks that would like to testify either for or against. Mr. Kadelka, if you could come. And anybody else that wishes to, if you could gear up to be close to the table so I can identify you. I'm sorry, I'm only going to be able to give you about 2 minutes so that we can ask questions. Members can ask questions about what you present. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I'm here on behalf of a number of agencies that have concerns regarding the bill and the fiscal cost to it. I know there's been a lot of discussion in general on some of the policies, so I just want to highlight two quick points on it. This bill does appear to be creating an additional system for proposed rules to go through. There are a number of opportunities for the legislature to be involved in rulemaking on the upfront end of through LCC. The agency cannot go through rulemaking without express authority from the legislature. So there are some of these checks and balances, and there are already provisions in there that committees with jurisdiction over the agencies can have review and delay rules and have impact on it. So see this as adding just another layer on top of it. Those other tools have not been used very often, as has been mentioned. Maybe it's best just to dust those off and utilize those instead of creating another system on top of the existing system. Also, there's been concern about rulemaking. A more efficient way, cost-efficient and time-efficient, and really to get at the heart of the problem, is to review not all of the rules, because a lot of them are non-controversial, pretty ordinary, but those specific rules of concern. If we dive into those rules, the agencies can work with the stakeholders, including the legislature, on those specific rules, and we can tackle them. I think we'll get a much faster response than going through all the rules, and we'll be able to really pinpoint the issues and have more effective use of our time and resources with everyone. In regards to cost, there are some additional requirements in this rulemaking process that will add time and some cost to it, but our largest concern is with the report that's mentioned for the environmental agencies at the end of the bill. And we do appreciate the chair's, the author's work on it. It does appear that the report does require a few less things compared to what was originally in the bill, including some work on cumulative impacts and additional work that we would, as an agency, need to bring in expertise that we don't have to do those reviews. However, as mentioned, this review of all rules, for us alone, it's 54 chapters, over 2,500 pages of rules, is a daunting task. Previously, when this was done about a decade ago, agencies were given 3 years. This is something that's going to be required to be done, if this is passed in May, about 8 to 7 months. So it will be a very daunting task for us. We will have to pull staff that aren't used to doing rulemaking work into it to accomplish it in that amount of time. That does have some.
Pardon me, Mr. Kadelka. We've got a couple of more testifiers, and so I need to have you wrap it up in about 60 seconds.
I'll leave it at that for now and entertain questions if needed.
Great. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kadelka, who decides whether the rules are non-controversial or not?
Mr. Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, we go through a lengthy process, as all agencies do in the agencies. We work with stakeholders, try to do a lot of upfront work to get to that to make sure we can try to get peace in the valley. One instance is we just had off public notice some changes to the wastewater operator rules certification with the Department of Health and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We received no comments on those rules. I think that's evidence that we worked with the parties beforehand. This is a rule that's actually going to make it easier for communities to hire staff to operate their wastewater facilities. I think that no comment coming back shows a level of non-controversy. If we're looking at rules specifically, if we target to them, I think the stakeholders can pinpoint those that they have concerns with. There's a number of them across all agencies that I think folks are very fine with moving forward on. I think those would be considered more controversy. If we can identify specific ones that are controversial or appear to need revamping at this point, I think that would be a better efficient use of our time. And I think that could be identified by the legislature and stakeholders.
Thank you.
Representative? Any other questions? I know we have a couple of other folks that would like to testify. If you'd come up to the mic, Mr. Meyer. Please hold your comments to no more than 2 minutes, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and I will be brief. I know time is running out. We have been working with the author on this bill. It has been moving forward. We do appreciate removal of a couple sections that were previous in the language. We do have some concerns, though. Just first of all, on the requirement to provide our past 10-year rulemaking docket, these documents are not under our permanent records retention requirements, so we'll provide something like that, but I don't have the actual docket 10 years ago. Our docket is updated live on our webpage. Communication and promotion and conversations with people as we're developing rules is very important to us. We'd like to have a very public, open process. There's a thing in statute 14.125 which requires it to be an 18-month process that really stops us from having a more complete open dialogue, because a rulemaking such as a shoreline ordinance revisions or things like that are very complex, and it does take more than 18 months, so put that on your radar screen. We do have concerns about the January 15th, 2013 deadline. The timeline there, the less time we have to do this report, the more it's going to cost us. Basically, we're going to have to pull people off of other things to get it done. I don't know what shape the legislature will be in that January 15th of next year to hear this work and go through it, so we would appreciate moving that deadline. I know we talked about the legislature has the ability to look at a rule or repeal a rule, require work on a rule at any given time. Rather than go through this report and regurgitate something we did in 2000 or 2003, we would rather talk about what rules are causing problems. Where is the problem? The sulfate standards, we're talking about that. We're revising those standards. But let's talk about the rules that are inhibiting commerce or jobs or education or whatever it may be, rather than require the administration to write a report and present it and go back in that way. Rather than have that process, we want to engage in a productive, meaningful process while we have the next month before deadlines are over to do something. So I would encourage you to take that route rather than this route. So thank you.
Representative Beard, any comments?
No, Mr. Chair, it's helpful to hear these comments because I'm making notes while they're talking and we'll be working.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Representative Beard or Mr. Meyer, I know that in planning and zoning in our county, the gentleman that was in planning and zoning had, in talking with the new people that have taken over for him because he's just retired, that a lot of things that came up from the bottom of planning and zoning in trying to confront rules and regulations that were coming down from the state, it got kind of obfuscated as far as not getting to the state as far as those rules, the concern for rules. And now all of a sudden a new person is in place and they're now starting to bring those rules to the surface. And yet the complaints for these rules have been going on for years within our agency or the agency or the county agency. And when you have someone in charge that basically pushes them down and said, we're not going to talk about this or we're not going to deal with this, how does somebody... Is it okay for someone in a county position that's not in charge to come circumvent his superior to come to the state to say we got problems?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, those are exactly the type of discussions we want to engage in. let's talk about where there are issues and try to resolve them rather than write a report, present it, and things like that. Because there are issues like that that we need to work on. As our partners in local government, in the DNR and the legislature, we need to figure out how to make things better, cheaper, faster, more efficient. But writing a report is just going to take us time to write the report. We will delay those discussions.
Thank you.
This will be the last question. And after I let Representative Moline ask her question, this bill is going to go to several, it sounds like, yes, additional committees. There will be more opportunity to testify. So my goal is within a minute and a half or so that we're going to take a vote on this bill. So Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had a comment to Mr. Myers about the sulfate standard. I mean, the only reason you're reviewing that is because the legislature appropriated $1.5 million and ordered you to review it. So that fiscal note is bigger than the one attached to this bill.
Representative Beard, your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. This has been good discussion about the bill. This is what good committee work is about. Representative Anderson kind of punctuated the necessity, I think, of the bill, though. Representative Anderson, the local legislator, the local senator, that probably is a very important point of contact for someone who has an issue with a rule that has popped up, whether it's zoning, whether it's water use, whether it's red flashing lights on motorcycles with funeral cars behind it, whatever it is. We actually have a responsibility for the rules that are out there. I'd encourage your support for the bill as we move it in the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Beard. I renew my motion to pass House File 2169 as amended and to go to the Environmental Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Same sign opposed?
Aye.
Thank you.
We've only got 2 minutes. I just want to remind everyone that we have a very short session. There is a lot of work that needs to be done. And I know that we waited for quite a while this morning. I know I teach 8 o'clock classes, and I know how difficult it is for some young people to get up. And I just want to admonish you to please plan ahead so that we can have as much of this committee hearing as possible with as many members possible present. Thank you. Adjourned.
I'm with you.